welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 27. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate your support by downloading the podcast and by listening. Thank you for supporting my efforts of trying to get good tennis information out there to people who love the game and are enthusiastic about it and have a hunger to improve. They want to make their games better so that they can further enjoy it. That's my goal here at the Essential Tennis Podcast, is to make you a better tennis player. Every week I answer listener questions here, and I also have a focus topic of a topic that I think will improve your tennis game by getting better information, by getting instruction that is correct, instruction that you can take to the court and practice, and through practice and hard work, actually make yourself a better tennis player. So if there's any way that I can help you specifically, having to do with your technique, your strategy, your mental game, or your equipment and fitness, you can always feel free to contact me by going to EssentialTennis.com and clicking on the feedback tab on the navigation on the top of the page. Another way you can ask me questions is by going to the Essential Tennis forums, which are also at EssentialTennis.com. There's a specific forum there for the podcast, and several other forums as well having to do with discussions on professional players and tournaments. We have one specifically for the U.S. Open where we've been discussing the different matches and players at the U.S. Open this year. And it's a good place to go and talk to other tennis enthusiasts like yourself. Today on the podcast, we have three different subjects we're going to talk about. First of all, we're going to finish off the focus topic of the week, which has been volleys, and we're going to talk about volleying in singles today, and specifically how to develop a better feel for when to come to the net and how to develop better instincts at the net once you've gotten to the net in your singles play, and how to win more in singles at the net using your volleys. We're also going to talk about kick serve. We're going to talk about the technique of actually hitting a kick serve and how to hit one. And we're going to compare and contrast it to other serve styles as well. And lastly, we're going to answer a quick equipment question sent to me by a listener. He asked me a couple questions about his strings and his frame, his racket. And so I'm going to answer his questions about his equipment. And that's what we're going to get to on the show today. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy the content I have coming your way today on the Essential Tennis Podcast.
And now it's time for the Essential Tennis Focus Topic of the Week.
Okay, let's go ahead and continue with our Focus Topic of the Week of volleys. And today we're going to discuss coming to the net in singles. We have a great question here from Demetrius. He posted this question in the forums at EssentialTennis.com. I'm going to go ahead and read through his post. It's a little bit long, but it's very well thought out and well written, and I think he makes some good points here. So I don't think you guys will mind hearing it. Demetrius wrote and said, "Hi Ian, I'm a 4.0 baseliner with good, reliable ground strokes and a decent fast-paced serve. I have an attacking style of play, mostly based on my forehand. Everybody says I have good volleying technique, and I tend to agree. Nevertheless, I keep making errors when I try to come to the net and missing somewhat easy volleys. I really feel that I would win a lot of complicated matches if I had more confidence in coming to the net and developing a more all-around game, specifically against pushers, which I usually have the most trouble with. For me, the most difficult part is deciding the right time and how to position myself, although I use the follow-the-ball tactic when coming to the net." That's good, Demetrius. That's what you should be doing on your way in as you approach. He continues and says, "I think what's causing me the most trouble for me is that I haven't developed that killer instinct to come to the net after a reasonably good shot. A lot of times I can dominate the point with my forehand, and when I hit a pretty good shot, I hesitate to come to the net because I feel much safer trying to finish the point off from the baseline. And even when I force myself to do it, I tend to miss the volley. So I have decided on the following strategy to hone my net instinct. For a few months, I want to try to come to the net as often as possible, even after not such a good shot, on almost any ball I hit. I have to come to the net almost on any shot for a while or so. After a lot of attempts, my brain can figure out which times are good and which times are not, using basically pattern recognition. The decision to come to the net will start to happen automatically. Do you think this is a good strategy for developing a solid, instinctively decision-making process for coming to the net at the right time? Best regards, Demetrius. Well, Demetrius, I found your post very interesting, and I enjoyed reading it. And first of all, let me encourage you. I'm glad that you have decided to take action on this. Being a 4.0 player, you're already pretty solid. That means that you've really gotten good at a lot of different aspects of the game. You know how to attack from the ground off a bouncing shot with your ground strokes. You've developed a major weapon with your forehand, and it sounds like you have a good weapon with your serve as well. And now you're starting to hone in on other aspects of your game that can kind of round you out as a player. So taking the step of deciding that you're going to improve this part of your game is great. Improving your confidence level at the net is going to raise the level of your game quite a bit. And it's going to just make your groundstroke game that much better when you're going to be able to come in confidently and put the ball away after pressuring your opponent with your groundstrokes. Now, you ask if I think your strategy would be a good one of basically coming in off of everything for a while and kind of seeing what works and what doesn't. And I have several different thoughts about that. First of all, realize that people learn in different ways. And hopefully this doesn't bore you guys. I'm going to get into a little bit of psychology here. Nothing too complicated, obviously. But there's three main ways that people learn any kind of skill. The first way is cognitive, which is basically through learning by reading and comprehension and getting information and simply understanding it and then going out and doing it. That's one way people can learn. That's basically your book smarts type person. People who learn very well through reading and hearing instruction, and they can just go out and then execute whatever it is that they have just learned. That's a cognitive learner. You can also learn visually by watching somebody perform a certain skill and then going out and being able to imitate that skill. A lot of times people learn this way. If I'm working with a student and they just don't quite get what I'm trying to explain with words, oftentimes having them hit me a couple shots and demonstrating the correct way to hit kind of gives people that aha moment, and they just kind of get it when they see it being done correctly. And so people can then imitate and learn a stroke that way. And then finally, people can learn kinetically through simply doing and feeling, actually experiencing physically, just working through a process. And just like what you're describing, you kind of learn through repetition. All right, in this situation, this works well. In this situation, this does not work well. And just working through it by forcing yourself through the situation multiple times, and through the experience, learning what works and what doesn't. Basically, trial and error. And obviously, most people are a combination or a mixture of those three types of learning when it comes to learning a specific sport or physical skill. I'm definitely a combination of all those, and all three of those can help me a great deal when I'm learning something new. And most people are a combination of those, although some people lend themselves more towards one or another more heavily. It depends on the person. So if the way that you learn is through doing and experiencing and feeling, then this is definitely the way for you to go in general. And I bet that's probably the case, because it sounds like through your post, it sounds like you already have a good cognitive understanding. Mentally, it sounds like you know what you're supposed to be doing, but you're just hesitating. You're not confident. You don't feel like you can succeed, even though you have the information. Mentally, you know what you're supposed to do, but you can't quite seem to execute it properly. And visually, I would assume that you've watched good players do this and follow the rules and the instructions that you know in your head that are supposed to work, and yet you don't quite seem to be able to duplicate it and get the same results. So that leaves kinetically and using experience. So it's very possible this could work well for you. My only hesitation in saying that this would be great for you is I would ask, what kind of competitive person are you? I don't think this would be a wrong decision for you to do at all, unless you're very strongly competitive and you would be frustrated in taking a step back with your game for a period of time. And depending on how often you play, I would assume this would take you a period of a couple weeks or maybe a couple months of doing over and over and over until you really, you know, get a comfortable feel moving forwards all the time and being able to really get some good instincts up there at the net. And if you're like me and you hate to lose and you tend to be kind of hard on yourself and a little bit of a perfectionist, even though in the back of your head you know that this is for kind of the greater good and in the long run this is going to be a benefit to you, it might be kind of hard on you to kind of take a step back in terms of how much you're winning and how successful you are just for a period of time. So my only reservation would be if you're really competitive and you're going to have a hard time mentally handling a little bit of failure at first, if you don't think that's going to be a problem, then I think your plan sounds like a good one. I would only caution you, make sure that your technique is good. And you say that most people would say it is, and you think it probably is as well. If as you start going through this adventure of coming in on every single shot, if you start to see a pattern of missing, if you usually miss in a certain spot, in a certain situation, start taking note of that. Pay close attention to how you're missing. And you need to see if there's a pattern. If when you're in this situation, you usually miss in this place on the court, pay close attention to that so that you can come back and talk to me about it and we can figure out what kind of possible technique issues might be at play. Because it is possible that, you know, you are putting yourself in a good situation now, but you could be missing these volleys for a technique reason as well. So, Demetrius, those are my thoughts. Yes, I think that could be a good plan. Just make sure that you're not going to be too hard on yourself and you'll be able to take a little bit of failure at first for long-term gain. And as you go through and do this, pay close attention to what's going on. And if you have a certain way that you're missing most often or a certain way that you're coming up short in this strategy, pay close attention to it. And we can work through it together and build your volley game. And again, great job taking the initiative to do this. It's going to make you a better all-around player, and it's really going to benefit your game. So best of luck to you. Please let me know how you do as you continue working on this part of your game. Thank you for the question.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com.
All right, guys, let's move on now and get to the kick serve question that we have. Let me tell you, I'm really struggling tonight. It's Thursday, the 4th of September, and right in the middle of Djokovic-Roddick right now. It's in the fourth set, and I got the TV right here by my desk. I'm having a hard time concentrating, and I need to get to bed soon. It's, let's see here, it's about 10:20 Eastern time, and I got some early lessons tomorrow morning, but just can't seem to take my eyes off the TV here, except once in a while to get some recording in. But let's move on, and sorry if I sound a little distracted tonight. But let's talk about the kick serve now. And this question comes from Tomas, who has submitted several questions to the podcast. Always good to hear from him. And once again, this question was submitted on the forums at EssentialTennis.com. And he wrote and said, "Hi, Ian. I think it was the last podcast where you were talking about how important it is to learn kick serve. I know that you explained it with the clock and something about hitting from 6 to 12, if I remember correctly. I just still don't understand the concept. I can serve both flat and sliced, but I really need to learn to hit a kick serve. Can you please explain it again a little slower? You have already seen my flat serve posted here on the forum, so you know a little about my current serve technique. Many thanks in advance, Tomas." Well, sure, Tomas, no problem. And by the way, he mentioned he posted some pictures of his serve. We have a picture, or rather a photo and video forum, where members are posting photos of their strokes, and don't have any videos yet, but we're working on that. Anyway, sure, I'd be happy to go over that, Tomas. And yes, you talk about 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock. That's the direction your racket needs to be moving in as it makes contact with the ball. Kick serve technique is just like topspin groundstroke technique in that the racket needs to be moving upwards, meaning towards the sky, as you make contact. That's what creates the topspin on the ball. Topspin is the ball rotating end over end on a horizontal axis over towards the other side of the court, your opponent's side of the court. So it's rotating up over the top. The ball is rotating over the top and down towards your opponent's side. That causes a curve in the ball downwards. And that downward curve is important because it allows us to aim higher over the net and gives us room for error. We can hit the ball more aggressively and higher at the same time and still make it go in play. So it allows us to hit the ball harder and yet maintain good consistency. That's why it's so important. And I was talking about having a three-quarter serve or a half-and-half serve, which is half slice and half topspin, for a second serve. I don't necessarily recommend, Tomas, a kick serve. A kick serve is different from what I was describing. A half-and-half serve is half slice and half topspin. And so it will curve a little bit from right to left if you're right-handed. And the topspin that you also have on the ball is going to make the ball curve downwards. So it's kind of a little bit of each. A kick serve, on the other hand, is almost all upwards. Rather than swinging a little bit to the right, to the side of the ball, and also a little bit upwards, both at the same time. So at a 45-degree angle, you're swinging up past the ball and to the right. Rather than doing that, which I believe I described as 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock, you're going to be swinging straight upwards, up the back of the ball. And so from 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock, and the time reference basically is after you've tossed the ball up into the air. If you imagine the back of the ball being a clock face, 6 o'clock would be the very bottom of the ball and 12 o'clock would be the very top, meaning the bottom of the ball is facing down towards the court and the top of the ball up towards the sky. And that's the direction that you want to be swinging when you make contact, upwards. So you're literally swinging upwards. That's what achieves the topspin for you. Now, in order to get that kind of racket path and make contact with the ball on the way upwards towards the sky, the toss needs to be changed. You cannot toss to the right of your body and hit a kick serve where you would normally toss to hit a flat serve or even a slice serve. Your toss on a kick serve has to be farther back behind you. And what I mean by behind you is when you make that toss, if you were facing the net, if you were in an open stance and facing straight towards the net, your toss would be going more to the left, along the baseline, more to the left. Now, when you set up for a serve, usually you're going to be perpendicular to the net and you're going to be in a closed stance. So that means that your toss will actually be going back behind you. Your back will be facing to the left along the baseline, back towards the ad side doubles alley to your left if you were facing the net. Once you've turned to the side to set up for your serve, you are in a closed stance and perpendicular to the baseline. So a kick serve toss will go along the baseline more to the left, which ends up being a little bit behind you as you have set up perpendicular to the baseline. Hopefully I described that clearly enough so that you guys get a mental picture there. So the toss will go back farther behind you than on a normal flat serve or slice serve. And what that does is it allows you to go from your racket drop after you've taken your racket back and up and after your arm has dropped to allow the racket to drop down back behind you. It allows you to go from that racket drop position straight upwards towards the ball because the ball has gone a little bit back behind you or a little bit over your head. It doesn't necessarily have to be behind you. In fact, a lot of people get injuries that way, tossing it too far behind themselves and having to really stretch back and use too much of their back. It's a good way to get a back injury. But anyway, after you've tossed back behind you, you then have a straight upwards path up towards the ball, and that upwards path is what gives us the topspin. Also, make sure as you swing upwards towards the ball, as you make contact, your racket face should be flat, should be perpendicular. If your racket face is open, meaning angled upwards just a little bit, it's going to go too far. The open face is going to launch the ball up too far, and the ball will travel out past the service line. The last thing I'm going to say as far as technique is concerned is, in addition to having the correct racket path at contact and having the right racket face at contact, to really make the ball kick, and by kick, that means that the additional topspin on the ball actually makes the ball bounce up higher than it normally would, and oftentimes will actually bounce a little bit out to the opposite direction that a slice serve would. In order to really make the ball actually kick, it really needs a lot of acceleration. If you're not loose and if you don't use good fundamental technique using your core and your legs, the big parts of your body to really accelerate towards the ball, you won't make enough spin to actually make the ball kick. In fact, a correct path for a kick serve, but without using your body correctly, without using your kinetic chain to accelerate and hit aggressively at the ball, kick serve will actually just kind of sit up and will never be very strong. So a kick serve really is done correctly, really is a pretty advanced swing, and takes a lot of acceleration and good technique to be able to pull off effectively and to actually make it kick up enough that it becomes difficult for an opponent. Also, make sure you have a loose and relaxed arm to allow your racket to accelerate, and you need to use good use of pronation to help, again, aid in accelerating the racket to whip it upwards towards the ball. Now, Tomas, I went back and I looked at the photos of your serve, and just quickly, let me comment. In number 6 and number 7, it really looks like your ball toss is kind of over your head. in number six and number seven of the sequence that you posted. The toss really is directly kind of over your face as you're looking upwards, and that would be pretty typical of a topspin serve or a slice serve. You don't say in your post what type of serve you're trying to hit in this photo, and I'm not sure if you still know or not which type of serve you were trying to hit. However, that toss location is usually around where a player would be tossing in order to hit a kick serve or a topspin serve. And if you look at photo number 8 and also a little bit number 9, you'll see that your body angle, if you were to draw a line down the right side of your body is angled well to the left at contact, which you can see in photo number 8. And that would, again, be pretty typical of a topspin serve. After leaning back and swinging upwards, oftentimes a player's body will be tilted a little bit to his left. So if that's where you're tossing to hit a flat serve, I would recommend getting your toss a little bit out to the right, to your right, since right now you're leaning to your left a decent amount. That being said, they're just photos, and it's much easier to tell in person exactly what's going on. But that would be my general suggestion. Go to the forums and post and let me know what type of serve you were trying to hit there. And let me know if my explanation of the kick serve has helped you understand it any better. Thank you for your question, Tomas, and always good to hear from you. Okay, let's go ahead and get to our final question today. And it's an equipment question, which I haven't answered in a little while. We've been letting Jeremy, our master racket technician, handle a lot of those. But he's been busy with his newborn baby, so we'll let him off the hook for this one, and I'll take care of it. This comes from Brian in California. He said, I have a new, hopefully quick question for you. I have listened to the Strains podcast 2 times. I purchased a set of this strain, and he sent me a link. And it's a link to... let me pull it up here. It was Technifiber Pro Red Code 17 strain, which is a 17 gauge and a monofilament polyester strain. So Brian said that he was giving that a shot. What strain type should I be using at my level? I purchased this strain before listening to the podcast. My strainer said that these strains have relatively no touch and that I should probably just go with synthetic gut. I saw a spin on the packaging, and they were just a little bit more expensive than synthetic gut, so I thought they would be great. I don't think they are playing well for me. What would you recommend? Would you recommend going with a synthetic gut at my level, just shy of 3.0? Well, I'll answer. He has 2 questions. I'll answer that one first, and I've already spoken with Brian since then. And no, Brian, this strain is not the right way for you to go. First of all, monofilament, well, there's 2 indicators here that would tell you that this isn't the right strain for you right now. First of all, monofilament, which means it's just a single piece strain, means that it's going to be pretty stiff in general anyway. Basically, the more different parts that make up the strain, there's multifilament strains that have several different layers. They have a core layer and then a lot of times a softer braided layer over the top of the core. That's always going to be a little bit more forgiving strain, a little bit softer strain. It's going to give you a little bit more touch. Monofilament strain is going to be stiffer. And then on top of that, this is a polyester strain, which is pretty much the stiffest type of strain that you can buy right now. It's popular with the pros to put in usually just the mains, just the strains that go up and down parallel to the grip, and then they'll put a regular synthetic gut or maybe a natural gut in the crosses. If you have taken this monofilament polyester strain and put it throughout your entire racket, that's pretty much the opposite of what you should be hitting with right now. You want something forgiving and something that's easy to hit with. You're not accelerating super fast yet, so you don't need this really stiff, kind of unfriendly strain. You're going to need something a little bit softer and just a regular synthetic gut, or maybe more of a premium synthetic gut that's a little bit even softer than regular synthetic, that's got a couple different layers to it. That's going to be your best bet as far as strains go. Now, he also asked about his racket. He said, I would also like to know if you have any input on my tennis racket. And again, he sent me a link, and it is a Dunlop 600G Ice tennis racket. And the racket is a little bit head heavy. It's 102 square inches, and it's 10.1 ounces strun. So kind of middle of the road as far as weight, kind of a little on the light side, and kind of middle of the road as far as head size as well. It's not a small racket head, but it's not big either. I wouldn't call it an oversize. 100 square inches is kind of right in the middle of the road as far as rackets these days, modern rackets. He said, I feel this racket is about right for my level, and probably any playing level between 3.0 and 4.0 racket. A big step up from the ultralight titanium newbie racket I was using before. Well, Brian, if you had anything that was much lighter than this, then I would say it was definitely too light for you. 10.1 ounces strun, like I said before, is a little on the light side. The lightest rackets you can buy are in the kind of upper 8 ounce range, unstrung, right around 9 ounces, and the heaviest rackets you can buy are right around 12 ounces. So, this racket at 10 ounces is kind of in the middle and a little bit on the light side. I typically try to steer people towards, the heaviest racket that feels comfortable to them. If you're just a little bit shy of 3.0, player, a 10-ounce racket, I feel, is just about right. I think you've done a good job with the racket selection there. Once you get up to a 3.5 and definitely 4.0, you're going to want to go to something a little bit heavier and something that's more handle-heavy instead of head-heavy. You're going to want more of the weight towards the handle instead of towards the tip so that the control of the racket is more in your hand instead of out towards the tip, which aids in power and not so much control. But for right now, I think this is probably a good racket for you. It's not too big. It's not too light. I think that's probably a good choice. If you get up to about a 3.5 level, I would definitely start looking at rackets with a little more weight to help you out in hitting the ball with your longer, more relaxed swings as you keep getting better. But for right now, stick with that racket and definitely get a little bit softer strength. All right, that does it for today's Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 27. Before I sign off for tonight, let me lastly remind you guys about the contest that I've had going the last about week and a half or so. It's a photo contest, and the most creative photo of yourself listening to the Essential Tennis Podcast is going to win a free set of string and a free book by Vic Braden. All you have to do is go to the Essential Tennis forums and go to the photo and video forum there in order to enter. And again, that contest closes this Sunday, which is the 7th. So the 7th is the final day to get your entry in. And on the 8th, podcast number 28, I am going to announce the winner of that contest. So if you would like a free set of string and a free book, go over to the forums and get a picture of yourself up there listening to the podcast. And again, the most creative and entertaining photo is going to win the contest. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. And it's late here on the East Coast, at least for me. I'm used to getting to bed around 10, and it's about 10 after 11. Currently, the Djokovic-Roddick match just finished. And man, just some great tennis. And I've been talking over the last couple podcasts about how happy I've been in watching this U.S. Open. Just some incredible competition, and this match was no exception. Very, very entertaining, and just great tennis from the baseline. Both players making good use of the net as well, coming forwards when they had the chance after pressuring from the baseline. And just good tennis. I won't give away who won if you happen to be listening to this before you watch it, in case you happen to record it. But I'm really looking forward to the final this Sunday. If you're around, go to the forums, and I'm sure there's going to be several of us talking about the final while it's going on. Okay, that's it. Have a great night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. and good luck with your tennis, and take care.